Okay, shalom, shalom. Let's do a quick review. Did you find the marker?
It's on your spender.
Oh, it's on my spender. Okay, thanks. Quick. Yeah, let's fix the permanent. Thank you. All right. So we're still working on developing me, myself, and I. Okay. And as the shiur goes on, what we're going to do is we're going to take this idea and start applying it to what are mitzvahs and what does learning Torah mean and what does it mean to daven. And we're going to use this paradigm to start explaining the details of Jewish life, but we're still finishing off the paradigm. So the first thing is the self is the soul, right? You don't have a soul. You are a soul. And you as a soul come in this world to play a character. Very good. Okay? Just like an actor plays a character. And you as a soul are never going to
die.
Let's get that on tape. Right. Okay. You as a soul will never die, right? Alright. What is a soul? A ray of Hashem. If Hashem were the sun, we would be a ray of Hashem. So you, now I'm not talking about, I'm talking about the you before you got your name. I'm talking about the you before you got this body. The you, right? That soul, that sense of I am, about we're talking little I am. That little I am is a facet of, an expression of, subset of, a segment of, whatever words you use, Hashem doesn't break up into pieces, but literally the word used in Hasidic thought is chelek Eloha mim'al. You are a part of, a facet of Hashem above. Now what does it mean above? Where is Hashem? Where is Hashem? Above what? Above time. Above space. Okay? Just as we had mentioned, Carl Jung, the Swiss psychologist who was influenced by Kabbalah, said, I simply believe that a part of the soul transcends time and space. We would say that differently. We would say what? We would say that the soul that transcends time and space, a part of that soul is in time and space. And that's us. Is there any way you could open that window so that maybe there'll be a little bit of breeze from that window? Even if just crack it. All right. And so he pointed out that at Har Sinai, the revelation at Sinai, who did we meet at the revelation at Sinai? Ourself. And when we say ourself, right, what does that mean, ourself? What does that mean? Hashem is ourself, the soul of our soul, the root of our soul, the essence of our soul, ourself. But what is ourself? Is ourself the sum total of us? How many people would say, yes, ourself is the sum total of us? How many would say that Hashem is not the sum total of us? Okay, so then he's the whole that's greater than the sum total of us. How many people would say Hashem is the whole that's greater than the sum total of us? Wrong. You don't get dessert. Okay, probably isn't any dessert anyways, right? Hashem is the whole that precedes any parts. A whole that doesn't emerge out of the parts. Rather, the parts emerge out of the whole. Just like the sun is not made of its rays, right? It's not the sum of the rays. It's not even the whole that's greater than the sum. I mean, like a car is a whole that's greater than the sum of its parts. If you buy the parts of the car, that will cost you less than a whole car. Why? Because even though the car is assembled by the parts, the car is a whole greater than the sum of the parts. Make sense? Hashem is not the sum of the parts. Hashem is not made of us, right? But we are, so to speak, emanating out of this one self, one soul, one consciousness. That is how Jewish mystical Hasidic thought would describe it. Okay? And so therefore the prophetic experience, the fact that a Navi could see the future, or Moshe Rabbeinu could download a way of life based on knowing all of history, all of time, all people. What does that mean? How are you able to receive instructions that can tell you how to live your life based on all of time, all of history, all people? Again, if you went to a psychologist and he says, listen, I can tell you the secret to life. And you say, how do you know the secret to life? Because I have been working in psychology for 10 years right now, and I have studied literally 300 people. And this is the secret of how you have to live your life. You say, okay, that's really great. That sounds pretty compelling. But then you see that this is another guy who's got a commercial and says, if you want the secret to life, I have been a clinical psychologist for 50 years, and I have studied 1,000 different people. And this is the nature of the human being, and this is how you have to live your life. You say, oh, that's really great. But then another one says, well, I am God, and I know all of history, all of time. I know every human being, and I'm going to give you a way of living that's based on knowing all of history, all of time. That's really what Torah is claiming. Torah is claiming that it is coming from the higher self, the single satellite self, so to speak, that we're all connected to, that we're all actually emanating out of, that we're all... And so you have to kind of think of it. You don't have to do anything. But think of it like an inverted tree, that our relationship with Hashem would be like leaves to an inverted tree. So you've got a bunch of leaves, and they're connected to a twig, and that's a family. And then you have all these twigs are connected to a branch, and that's a neighborhood. And then you have a branch that's connected to a thicker branch, and that would be the city, which is connected to an even thicker branch would be the country, which is connected to an even thicker branch would be the world, which is emanating out of a root, which you can't see, it's under the ground, and that would metaphorically be Hashem. Labriut, okay? Or we gave a metaphor of our relationship to Hashem is like the relationship between all these appliances in the room and electricity. So you got the fan, you've got the light, and you got the crock pot over there, and they're all plugged in, okay? So in this metaphor, who would Hashem be?
Electricity.
Electricity. When electricity flows through the fan, what would the fan be?
Body.
In our metaphor, where would you put the fan?
Character.
How many people would say, well, put the fan as the character? Oh, you guys are chickening out. Yes, it's the character, okay? The fan is the character. When the electricity flows through the fan, what becomes manifest? What is the soul of the fan? The power of cooling. What is the soul of the light bulb? The power of lighting. And what is the soul of the crock pot? The power of crocking. Right? The power of heating. Okay. That was a little review. Okay. That was pretty good. I'm very impressed. You guys are getting it. Very nice. You know, I was blown away. I met with, we did an alumni event on Sunday in the Upper West Side, and I met with a couple guys that did a write years ago, 7 years ago. I mean, and it was amazing how they knew this material and they were applying it in their lives and looking at their life situations, you know. It was really quite remarkable how well we had, we brainwashed them. Okay, so, all right. Let's go now. So then we talked about Hillel. If you look at source 5 very quickly, because this is Bamish and Gemara, Hillel, who's known for being the master of Anava, he is the epitome of humbleness. He says, Imanikan Akolkan. If I'm here, let the party begin. All's here. We don't need anybody. I'm the party, right? So Rashi says over there, and I don't think we even read the Rashi, he told everybody, don't sin against the name of God. When did he even use the name of God? He said, if I'm here, then all is here. Where is the name of God in that sentence? Yes. Yeah.
You're saying I.
Exactly. I is one of the terms referencing Hashem. So much so that the great Hasidic master, Reb Zusha of Arnapol, would never say I. Who am I to say I? Oh, he wouldn't say who am I to say I, of course, right? He'd say, who is Zusha to say I? So if he would go somewhere, if he knocked on the door and someone says, who is it? He wouldn't say, it's I, Zusha. He'd say, I. If he wanted some food or something, he'd say, could Zusha have an apple? Right? But he would never say I, because he had this sense that really the I, the essential I, is divine. Okay? So look at number seven. So this is from Rav Kook. The sweetest and most complete understanding of Hashem consciousness is the recognition that the divine relationship to the world in general and in all particulars, both physical and spiritual, is the relationship of soul, the spiritual side that gives to the body life, light, sustenance, and growth. Why are we reading this piece of Kook? What is he telling us? What is he echoing in terms of the thought here that we're sharing, the principle that we're sharing? What did he just say Hashem is? He is to the world like
electricity.
He said nothing about electricity. Read what he said. The sweetest and most complete understanding of Hashem consciousness. What does it really mean to be aware of Hashem? Who is Hashem? Is the recognition that divine relates to the world in general and in particular. Right? Hashem relates to the world in the general world and to every single particular facet of the world, both the physical and spiritual. That relationship is the relationship of soul. What's he saying? Hashem is to the world like?
Soul.
It's like the soul is to the body. Okay? And so Rav Kook is simply echoing that idea. You see, as long as you think that Hashem is some guy in the sky telling you what to do, then that means that when you do mitzvahs, what are you actually doing? What? No, say it. What are you saying? Go ahead. What did you say? It sounded right, but I couldn't hear you completely.
If you believe that God is just someone in the sky.
Yes. And you are going to do his mitzvahs. The God in the sky tells you, thou shalt keep Shabbos. So, if you keep Shabbos, why you keep Shabbos? Because that's an act of, what's the word? Oh, it starts with O?
Obedience.
I'm obeying some being who is a foreign being. Right? A foreign being, someone who's not me, that I'm not connected to, that I'm not part of. So that would mean that he's imposing his will on me. And every mitzvah I do that I don't feel like doing actually means that what am I actually doing? If I put on tefillin, I don't want to put on tefillin, but there's a guy in the sky, there's a big, big tyrant God in the sky who's telling me to put on tefillin. If I don't put them on, I'm going to get punished. And if I do put them on, I'm going to get rewarded. But I really don't want to put them on. Right? But I do it anyway. So why did you do it?
Fear.
Because I don't want to be punished, and I don't want to lose reward. But if I understand that Hashem is really the soul of my soul, our self, the self that I emanate, if my relationship to Hashem is very much like if I were a leaf, my relationship to the root of the tree, or if I were a ray of light, my relationship to the sun. And so if the sun or the root of the tree tells me to put on tefillin, right, and I don't feel like putting on tefillin, and I do it anyways. What have I just done? Why would I do it? So why would you do it? Are you doing it because you want to be obedient? Because you want reward? Because you don't want punishment? Why are you doing it?
You want reward and you don't want anybody in that.
Because you do
what? What? You want to build the relationship. The relationship's already there. It's a fact. It's an existential fact. You are a leaf that's getting all your life force from this root. Right. By the way, you actually say this every day in Yishtabach. Baruch Chei Ha'olamim. Blessed is Chei Ha'olamim. What does Chei Ha'olamim mean? The life of the universe. Hashem is the life of the universe, like the soul is the life of the body. Okay? So, when I switch the paradigm, and Hashem is no longer some separate alien foreign being who's telling me what to do, right? So then the act of mitzvah is not an act of obedience where I'm giving up what I want to do to what he wants to do, but rather the act of mitzvah is what? An act of?
Self-love.
connection.
Self-fulfillment, self-expression. I am expressing myself. If I were really, really in touch with myself, would I want to do mitzvot?
Yes.
According to this, yes. And who succeeded at that? Avram Avinu. You probably learned this in school. They probably told you that Avram Avinu kept all the mitzvahs, right? It's in this week's parsha. It says that, if you read it carefully, that he didn't mix milk and meat and that he knew these laws. How did Avraham Avinu know these laws? This is well before there was a revelation of Sinai. What was unique about Avraham is?
He was able to have his ratzon aligned with Hashem's ratzon.
How?
He was self-aware.
Because he was self-aware. And so, what Torah is teaching us is the path of Torah is claiming that all mitzvot, all learning Torah, all doing mitzvahs, is to become more your true self as part of a greater self that is becoming present and manifest in the world through you. Got that? That's a pretty intense channel, shift. So to serve Hashem is actually, is it selfless or selfish? How many people think that serving Hashem is selfless? Put up your hand. How many people say that it's selfish? I didn't say it's a bad thing.
It's self-serving.
Right? It's selfish. It's actually selfish, but it's egoless, not selfless. It's egoless. When the soul gets lost in the character, starts to think, I am my body, I am my personality, I am my powers. These are all my powers, these are all my strengths. I'm not connected to a power greater than myself. I'm not a manifestation of a greater self. Right? So that's called ego, and we learned that ego is an acronym for what?
Editing God out.
Editing God out. E-G-O. Editing God out. Well, you guys are amazing. I'm so impressed. Wow. Wow. Okay, so now we're going to learn a piece from Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. This is from his book, Inner Space. And it's right there on 8, and then you'll turn the page. Labriut. Okay, so the closest we come, the closest we can come to conceiving Hashem's essence is to know what He is not. Okay, by now you guys can figure out what that means. He's saying, the closest you can come to knowing Hashem's essence is to not know who He is, but to know who He's not. Why? Yeah, Hafif. Why can't you perceive what He is? Just because He's outside of reality, you can't perceive Him? It'd actually be more correct to say, because actually Hashem would be more described as that He is reality, but He's outside of time and space. He's out of this world, right? But that's, so that's why we can't perceive Him, because He's just too far. Because He's also manifest in time and space, called the Shekhinah. So yeah, Gabe?
Because God describes things that He knows are immortal for our everyday life. So based off of that, we can see what God does not hold Himself onto.
I understand. He's saying that the only way you could, the closest you could come to conceiving Hashem's essence is to know what He is not. You can only come to know God by knowing what He's not. Why? What is that analogous to? Right? That's like a little bit of a hint. Yeah.
There's no possible way to define God or define.
Why not? Why can't you define God? It's something very similar to you. What about you can you not define? You can't define yourself. The self cannot be defined. Why can the self not be defined? Because it's doing all the defining. It's beyond, it's outside the defined. Just like light. Light, which enables you to see colors, textures, shapes. It itself cannot be described by any color, any texture, any shape. Right? So the Gemara says, just as the soul sees and is unseen, so too Hashem sees and is unseen. In other words, Why can you come the closest to Hashem by knowing what He's not? Because He is the essential self of all self. Just like the self, you. Right? Before you got your name, before you got your body, before you got your talents. Right? That self just cannot be described. It's the light that's describing everything, so to speak. Yeah? Okay? So, in this sense, the term Ein Sof, which is the Kabbalistic use, the Kabbalistic description of God, the Ein Sof, also has the connotation of the ultimate nothingness. So in Kabbalah, the way we reference Hashem is the Ein Sof. Right? In biblical and in literature, liturgy, Hashem is referred to as Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. And that's metaphorical language pointing to Hashem. But in Kabbalah, the essential term pointing to the divine is Ein Sof, which he's saying is ultimate nothingness. Now, what would that mean that Hashem is being described as ultimate nothingness? He continues, thus the Kabbalists use the term nothingness as it applies to something which not only cannot be described, but which is totally beyond our conception and ineffable. In other words, why is Hashem referred to as the ultimate nothingness? Not because He's nothing. He's very much not nothing. So then why is He being referred to as nothing, as the ultimate nothingness? Yeah. Exactly, because nothing can describe Him. Hashem doesn't fit into any category, right? You follow that? Right? I mean, everything, if you want to understand it, it fits into liquid, solid, it fits into animal, vegetable, mineral, right? But Hashem doesn't fit into any category, right? It's kind of like going to a general store. They don't sell anything specific, right? It's a Stephen Wright joke. Okay, you guys don't have class. All right. But Hashem is... So that's why Hashem is the ultimate nothing. So the whole concept, the Rambam saying that, you know, the negative traits of Hashem that you can't... You know, all you really can say about Hashem is what He's not. Because as soon as you say that what Hashem is, you've turned Him into what? You've turned Him into a thing. You've turned Him into an object. Something you can point to. And as soon as you say Hashem is God, that means that not God is what? Okay, fine. So, but as soon as you say God, there's a problem even using the word God and referencing the Ein Sof. Because as soon as you say God, that means what? There is a? What? That's right. There's a border. There's a place where God stops and not God's start. And that already by definition would be heretical to say that Hashem is limited. So as soon as you say Hashem is this, you immediately imply that He's not that. And if He's not that, that means that when you get to that, God stops, ends. That's the border of divinity, right? But when we talk about Hashem, we're talking about the ultimate nothingness, because Hashem cannot be put into any category, cannot be described. And He's going to further clarify that. That's why I refer to Hashem as the ineffable. What does ineffable mean? Explainable. You simply can't express it in words. All right? So just wait. Just read a little bit more. When we then use the word Ein, nothing, to describe the essence of a human being. So when we describe the essence of the human being, created in the image of God, and we say it, we also describe it as Ein. What are we describing about the human being?
That is something.
No. What are we saying? When we say that the essence of a human being is also described as Ein, nothing, what are we referring to? The soul, the self. The self, just like Hashem, so to speak, a little piece of Hashem, is also Ein. Because the self cannot be put into any category. The self is describing everything, but it itself cannot be described. Right? So the self is a little drop, so to speak, metaphorically, of the great ocean of Ein. All right? So he says, when we then use the word Ein, nothing, to describe the essence of a human being, creating the image of God, we refer to the ultimate I that cannot be known. Right? You that's doing the knowing can't be known. Right? Right? You just know your knowing. But you can't turn the knowing into your own object. It is the intangible source of my will that impels me to do whatever I decide. What's the intangible source of your will? The self. I want to pick up the marker. Who just did that? Who just directed that? Who just commanded that? The character, Hashem, or the self? The self. The self is telling my will to want to pick up. But can the self do it on its own? No. Where is it even getting this power from in the first place? From Hashem. Good. So that's what he's saying. He says, the ultimate eye of the canopy, it is the intangible source of my will that impels me to do whatever I decide. It is higher than thought itself. Why is the self higher than thought?
Because it thinks.
That's right. The self is generating thought. Where is the thought?
In the self.
It's just like in a dream. You're having a dream, and all that dream is happening on the screen of self, consciousness, right? So all those thoughts are living in and being generated by and sustained by the self. Yeah? Okay, so he goes on and says, it is higher than thought itself, for it is obvious that the I is the I that tells my mind to think. And that's an amazing thing, to just kind of exercise and kind of experience I. Like right now, I want you to think about your left toe. Go ahead.
Which one?
Where's your left toe?
We have five.
I have nine.
Your left toe. You don't have a left toe to the left. Oh, the left of your left foot. Okay, fine. It was a trick question. Okay, good. All right? I want you to be aware of the left toe of your left foot. Okay, can you all feel that? Are you now suddenly aware of that? Were you aware of it before I said it? No. So you, as a soul, are like a spotlight. Okay? So now I want you to now let you the spotlight of the self illuminate your right earlobe. Are you aware of your right earlobe? Are you suddenly feeling its presence in your life?
Yes.
Right? No?
Yes.
I didn't ask you to move it. I told you to be aware of your left earlobe. All right, so you, the self is kind of like a spotlight. And the spotlight, if you want, you can focus it on any thought, any physical sensation, any emotion. But the spotlight itself cannot be described. The light, which is metaphorically for the self, the soul in Kabbalah, soul in the divine God is referred to as a light, metaphorically because of this reason. Okay, now comes something intense because I bolded it. It is because the source of my will, which is what? The self, which of course the source of the self is Hashem. It is because the source of my will is on the level beyond thought that it's impossible to imagine it. Why can you not imagine the source of will? Why can you not imagine the self?
Because it's what doesn't be imagined.
Exactly, because the self is doing the imagining. So it can't imagine itself. It's the source of imagining. All right? So when Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, I want to see your face, and Hashem says, no man shall see my face and live, why can't you see Hashem's face? For the same reason that you can't see whose face?
Your own
face. When you look in a mirror, that's not your face. That's a reflection of your face. Right? And so, there is simply no category in my mind into which it will fit. Right? You can't fit the self into a category. Why? Because where are all those categories? Within the field of consciousness called the self. All right? Therefore, when I try to imagine the source of my will, the real me, the soul, all I can depict is nothingness. Right? I can't come up with anything, so I call it nothing. Not that it doesn't exist. It's something. It would be more correct to call it no thing rather than nothing. Because nothing seems to be the opposite of something, But no thing, it's just simply not a thing. Okay? From this point of view, all the other attributes of the human personality are not the real ani, right? But can be defined more properly as my ego. And what's that referring to in our lingo? What the character. Okay? So you have the self and all the properties, all your attributes, whether you're smart, whether you're sensitive, whether you're kind-hearted, whether you're emotional, those are part of the character. Okay? So in our lingo, we're going to call that me. He calls it the ego. Now, there's nothing wrong with ego if you do what he now says, but you've had a question, yeah.
I just don't understand this whole self and soul part. When a person gets a neshama, the neshama comes fully.
A person doesn't get a neshama.
He's born with a neshama.
No, he's not even born with a neshama. He is a neshama.
So is the neshama fully developed when you are?
I don't know how to describe. We can't really say anything about the neshama. There's not much we can say about the neshama. You're right. It's not your soul focusing on it because you don't have a soul. It's you focusing on it, and you are what we call a soul. The you, that awareness. You're just awareness. Okay? Your awareness. Okay? Where was the power of cooling before it entered into this fan? Where was it?
Nowhere?
It's another location.
Another location? The power of cooling. Where was the power of lighting before it entered into the light bulb?
Was it a different form?
It was part of electricity. It didn't really have a distinct entity, identity, but it is definitely being born out of, it's a facet of electricity. There's electricity, and a facet of electricity is the power of cooling, power of heating, and the power of lighting. So you are the power that's powering you and that body.
The reason you're able to notice in your body is because the neurons in your mind, it's not, it's like...
So you think that the soul is emanating out of your brain, which the same thing is saying that the song is emanating out of the radio. That if you assembled a radio, then it would start playing music, and the music is coming out of the radio. Is the music coming out of the radio? From the broadcast. Okay. And it's not the radio that creates the music. The radio simply transmits the music because it is tuning into a broadcast. You are tuning into a Godcast. Okay? Okay? So your brain, right? Your brain is like a radio, and it's not generating consciousness. It's simply transmitting consciousness. And that consciousness is coming from a higher field of consciousness, which we call Hashem. Okay? Even the baby. Yeah, but you have to stand. As the brain grows, what will we see? That's right. It picks up more of consciousness. But it's not emanating the consciousness. It's not generating the consciousness. So as your body grows and as your brain grows, it becomes a greater radio to receive consciousness and transmit consciousness. Okay? When a person goes to sleep, you leave your brain. Because right now, you know, it's very interesting, but right now I want you all to point to yourself now. Point to yourself.
Everything.
No, not after my class. Pretend you were never in this class, and now point to yourself. Right. The interesting thing is people go like this, which is so weird, because you actually experience yourself in your head. We're all experiencing ourselves in our head. We kind of think that I'm in my head, and I have these earphones connected to my ears, and I've got this screen that's connected to my eyes, and I've got these levers that are moving my hands and my legs, but I'm inside my head. Close your eyes. I'm inside of here. Right? And that's the self is inside of here. But you can't really prove that, right? Because even your head that you're thinking about, are you in your head Or maybe your head is in you. Because the head that you're perceiving is in the field of your consciousness. Same thing with the room. You experience yourself in the room. But the only room that you experience is the room that you're conscious of. So are you in the room, or is the room in you? Hey, trippy, no? Trippy. The answer is yes. It's beyond either or, like a dream, right? You're having a dream, and there you are in the dream, right? And you bash your leg against a chair, and it starts to bleed, and there you are. But it's bleeding, and it's really painful, and you start to think, I hope this is a dream, because this is really not cool. I'm dying here, bleeding to death. And you say, I'm going to try and wake myself up. And then you're kind of in the dream, but out of the dream. And then you realize that all the blood and all the people were in the space of your consciousness, right? And even you were in you. Got that? Okay. All right. I want you to know, we're going to do this class on Purim, and it's going to make so much more sense. Okay, so now let's look at the next paragraph. The word ego, he says, is rooted in the Greek concept of the I, which can be characterized as the sum total of psychic functions that define a person's relationship with himself and the world. Now, he's using the word I, not the way we're using it. What he's basically saying is the ego is anything that defines your relationship with people. Right? Kindness is a relationship to people. If there's no people, there's no such thing as kindness. Intelligence is a relationship to things, because if there's no things to be intelligent about, you can't be intelligent. Right? Every attribute of your life is in relationship to something outside of yourself. So that's an attribute. Okay? So that we're going to call ego. And it's the psychic functions that define a person's relationship with himself and the world. Okay? So he goes on and he says, if these ego functions do not look to their source in the ani, they merely stand in the way of one's growth and development as a person. Tell me what he just said, because we already learned that. Right? He's saying that the me and all the character traits of the me, right? If the character traits of the me don't look to the self, then what's going to happen? Right? What does it mean? Look at it again clearly. Right? He says, if these ego functions, which is all the facets of what we're calling me, do not look to their source in the ani, which is what?
Self.
The self, in this case. They're merely standing in the way of one's growth and development as a person. What is getting in the way? This is like the secret to everything. If you're going to be a therapist, everybody's got to know this. What is the secret to self-growth and all development?
Service.
Right. What gets in the way of you really growing?
Ego.
Why?
You're
because you're not looking, because the ego's not looking to the self, but rather, where is the self?
The ego.
It's stuck in the ego. Right? You're stuck in the character. Right? I can't grow. Why? Because I'm just an angry person. Right? It's my attribute. I'm an angry person. So tell me not to be angry. I can't not be angry. That's not true. Are souls ever angry?
No, they just feel angry.
They can feel angry. They can choose to employ the attribute of anger, which might be the right thing to do if you're dealing with evil people and need to, you know, destroy them, right? And that's what we said. You know, don't ever say, I am depressed. What's wrong with saying, I am depressed? What's wrong with saying I am depressed?
You're not depressed.
Because then you become depression. And how are you going to get? You're going to go to a doctor and say, Doc, I'm really depressed, man. Like, I'm so depressed, man. And the doctor says, well, I'm going to make you more depressed because this is going to cost you $300 just talking about this for for 15 minutes. Right? Because you've become your character. The way you grow is you're able to step outside of your character, look at your character traits, look at your emotions. I actually had this discussion with somebody the other day who told me that he realized that he has OCD, right? He is obsessively compulsive. And he's having compulsive thoughts. And he went to a therapist And what did the therapist say? He said, I couldn't believe it. This is what you taught us in Shana Aleph at Oraita. The therapist said, just look at the thoughts. When you have this obsessive compulsive thought that's just ruminating inside of you, don't try and fight it. Why should you not try and fight it? Right? Suddenly you just keep thinking about, you start, you know, worrying about the test tomorrow. By the way, there's a test tomorrow. No. You start worrying about this test tomorrow, and you're just going over the test. It's looping around in your head. The test, I got to stop thinking about that test. I got to stop thinking about the test. The more you resist it, if you resist it, what will happen? Right. That which you resist persists. Okay?
So if you're trying not to laugh, it's easier.
That's right. So what happens? What happens if a person is looping around in their head, right? And he's got this thought, this obsessive thought, right? I'm stupid. It just keeps coming back to me. I'm stupid. And then I'm about to have a tip, but I'm stupid. And then I'm about to go meet somebody. I'm stupid. They're going to know I'm stupid. What do you do when you have this obsessive thought that you're stupid? It's so stupid that you think that way, by the way. Right? What do you have to do? Just look at the thought. Just say, you know, this is just a thought. It doesn't define me. Right? In fact, it's a stupid thought. Give it a name. Right? Oh, that's silly, stupid thought. If I imagine what color is this thought, it's blue. Why am I doing these crazy things? This is what his therapist told him to do. Why is it? The therapist said, give the thought a name. Just look at the thought. Just say it's a thought. The more you fight the thought, the more you give it energy. The more you say it's more than a thought. But if you're having a depressing episode, which of course nobody at Oraita has depressive episodes, of course, God forbid, right? Well, what do you do when you're having that depression? Just remind yourself, this is just a thought. It doesn't define me, right? I'm a soul, right? This is just a thought. And that's how he started changing his life. His life was being destroyed by these obsessive thoughts. And what he was told by another therapist is you have to think of something else. So he said, I got to stop thinking about this and think about something else. I got to stop thinking about this and think about something else. But he couldn't stop thinking about it until he realized it's just a thought. And just as it came, it can go. And I'm not going to hold on to it. I'm not going to latch on to it. Right? And that's how he's being able to start beating these obsessive thoughts. Okay? He says, Rabbi, that's exactly what we're learning. Shana Aleph. I'm a soul, right? And a soul has thoughts, but doesn't get lost in the thoughts. Doesn't become those thoughts. Okay? That is mental health. You can't grow until you can kind of step outside and look at your behavior, look at your feelings, look at your thoughts. Otherwise, you become cemented into them, and your character becomes like a straight jacket. You have to kind of step out of it. I think I shared with you, you know, imagine you get up in the morning. Yeah, I know it's hard to imagine. But yeah, imagine you get up in the morning, and it's really dark, and you just throw on a tie. You're running to a meeting, but this tie is ridiculous. It doesn't fit at all your shirt and your suit. So why don't you take the tie off? You're looking like an idiot. Why not take off the tie? What do you got to do to take off that tie? You're walking downtown. You're in the subway. People are cracking up laughing. You've got the most ridiculous tie. And so why don't you take it off? What? Because you're not aware that you're wearing the stupid tie. If you were aware that this looks stupid, how hard is it to take off a tie? How much effort do you need to take off a tie? Nothing. So what really is the work you need to do? To become aware that I'm wearing this tie and it looks stupid. Okay? So the first step to all personal growth is the ability to step out of your ego, step out of your attributes, get in the place of I am a soul. I am having obsessive thoughts. I am not my thoughts. I can let go of those thoughts. I don't have to become those thoughts. It's a story about a fellow who went to a guru. And he asked the guru, Master, how do I master meditation? And the master said, when you meditate, don't think of monkeys. And I said, well, thank God for that, because I never think of monkeys when I meditate. Sure enough, that day he closed his eye to meditate, and what did he see?
Monkeys.
And another monkey, and another monkey. And the more he tried to, I said, I can't believe it. I got to get rid of these monkeys. I got to get rid of these monkeys. And the more he tried to get rid of the monkeys, what do you think happened?
More monkeys.
More monkeys. So he went back to his guru. He says, Master, I don't know what to do. I'm going crazy with all these monkeys. So what advice would you give him?
Don't think of nothing. What
would you do?
Embrace the monkey.
Embrace the monkey. No, don't embrace the monkey. Khafif, what would you do with the monkey?
Be above the thought of the monkey.
Okay, but how do you do that? Just look at it. Don't try to get rid of that monkey. Just look at that monkey, and it'll go away on its own, right? And that's what his guru told him. Don't fight it. Just look at it and let it go. Just let it go. The difference between a healthy person and a crazy person, we all have thousands of thoughts going through our heads all the time. They call it the stream of consciousness. It is a stream. So don't stop it. Don't dam it up, right? And so, but crazy people, they get a thought and they become it. They latch onto it. It starts to control them. They start to obsess over it, right? But we all have thousands of thoughts that are dropping into our heads. And just as they came, let them go, okay? So that is what Rav Arya Kaplan is teaching us, but it's actually a fundamental principle in what's called Jungian therapy, which is to do that. Let's read a little bit more and you can ask more questions. If, however, they are garments or expressions of the ani, if my me is a garment or an expression of the self, as the spherot from Chachma to Keter to Malchut are expressions of Keter, in other words, in Kabbalah, Keter is the self. In Kabbalah, it's called the Anochi or the I. Chachma bin Adat, wisdom, understanding, those are expressions of the self. Those are garments of the self, right? Then the basic ingredient of self, the will, can also connect to its source, the divine will. So when you are in that place of self, right, you can then connect to the divine self, the divine will. And the last line, the more a person can identify with the true ani ein, the more you can identify with the true ani ein. Why does he say the true ani ein? What's the ein?
Soul.
Why is it called ein? Because it can't be described. It's no thing. And so too the self is no thing. Okay? The more he is in touch with the divine within himself. Explain to me what he just said, because this is the punchline. And this is pretty, pretty powerful. Extremely essential when you're ready for more mature thinking about who you are and the nature of your relationship to Hashem. When you can really live as a soul and step away from your thoughts, your emotions, your physical sensations, right? Realize that you're like a mirror. Imagine a mirror, and then in front of it walks a dog. And the mirror thinks, I'm a dog. And then the dog leaves and says, oh my gosh, who am I? And then a little boy walks by and looks in the mirror and says, oh, I'm a little boy. Right? And then the little boy walks by, but he's pulling a little toy truck. And then the toy truck goes in front of the mirror. And the mirror says, oh my gosh, I'm a toy truck. Right? You're none of these. You're a mirror. The self is like a mirror. Or imagine you're a computer screen, right? And you're a self-aware computer screen. And up on the screen comes a picture of a flower. And what would you mistakenly think? I'm a flower, right? But then the image goes away. It's a screensaver. And then suddenly another screen image comes up, and it's a picture of a... a toy tiger. So now the screen thinks it's a toy tiger. But the screen needs to know, I'm a screen. And these images emanate out of me. They are sustained by me, but they are, they're not me. My emotions are not me, right? But I express myself through the emotions. I have emotions. I'm going to use them. I have a car. I'm going to use that car. But the car doesn't have me. It doesn't drive me. I drive the car. This is the key to all mental health, to live as a soul. Okay? And when you live as a soul, what are you in touch with? What did he say? The soul of all souls. What did he say? The divine within you. Right? If you could literally, if you could transcend your ego, if you could really completely, you know, get in control of your emotions and your feelings, you would literally be tapped into divinity. And you would have incredible powers. Right? Just like the story of Rav Chanina ben Dusa. You know this story. His daughter, it was Erev Shabbos, and she bought vinegar thinking it was oil. Do you know the story?
No.
Right? Well, she bought vinegar thinking it was oil. But it's minutes before Shabbat, and when she poured it, she said, oh my gosh, this is oil. I'm sorry, this is vinegar. She can't light Shabbos candles. Her father walked in, and he sees how distraught she is, and he says, what's wrong, sweetie? He said, she said, well, this is vinegar, not oil. He said, that's not a problem. He who says oil shall light, shall say vinegar shall light. Light the vinegar. And she did. And this is a miracle. This is a Gemara story. The story says that she was able to, he said, he who says oil shall light, shall say vinegar shall light. Light the vinegar. And she lit the vinegar and it lit like oil. This is more amazing than what miracle? Hanukkah, it was at least oil that lasted for more than it could. This is vinegar. But what's strange about the story is what? What did he say?
He
who says, oil shall light, shall say vinegar shall. Who's the he? Hashem. Did Hashem say, let vinegar light? He said it through him. Because Rav Chanina ben Dusa was so in touch with himself as a soul, he was already able to do acts that were godly. That's how powerful this is. Right? That's how powerful. When you go to a tzaddik for a bracha, right? He's pure soul. He's so in touch with himself. There's something divine about him. He's not God, right? But he is godly. And he's able to channel godly powers into the world because he's so beyond his ego. He's so in touch with his true self, the no thing, as a part of the ultimate no thing, that literally this man is godly. He's not God, but he's living that facet of God that he is. Okay? So this is a pretty intense piece. The point being that the more you can transcend your ego, the more you can get above what you're thinking, and the more you're in the driver's seat and you choose what you want to think. Or when a thought hits you, you at least are capable of not becoming lost in it and controlled by it. Right? You have a feeling. You know, when it says that if a person gets angry, it's equal to what? Anybody know? If a person gets angry, it's considered to be a avodah zarah. So you're not allowed to get angry. It doesn't mean you can't feel anger. You cannot be told to not feel anger, right? You're asked to not act it out. Don't start throwing things. You're feeling angry. But how do you protect yourself from feeling angry, from turning into rage and violence? What do you need to do? And how will you do that? By being soul aware. Say, I have anger. I'm looking at this anger. I'm going to stop for a second. Right? They say that the Chafetz Chaim had a problem with anger. Most people don't know this, and most people are surprised at that. The Chafetz Chaim had a problem with anger. So what made him a tzaddik? He never acted it out. He would feel angry, and he was seen going over to the corner of the room and speak to himself and say, calm down. You know, maybe he would say, I'm not this anger. I don't know what he would say, right? But he would basically get beyond it and not let it bring him down and not control him, right? This is the practicality of this. It's not just an interesting philosophy. This is the secret, all personal growth and empowerment. To live as a neshama, right? And Torah is claiming that the more you want what Hashem wants, the more you are becoming aware of yourself as a soul, which is part of the soul of all souls. Okay? Yeah.
You said that we would do a better job of describing God as what He is not than what He is, but don't we say if God is not blank, then what, aren't we putting Him in a box though?
No, we're just doing an exercise to remind ourselves that we can't say God is a this, because then we're turning Him into an object, then we're giving Him borders, and that's why...
It's still giving borders, though.
What?
How? Not giving Him borders, though. How? Saying that I'm not a female, wouldn't that say... It's making a border smaller of what I am.
No. By saying you're not a female, you didn't say you're a male. Otherwise, you would have said you're a male. You're just saying, I know what I'm not, but I can't describe what I am. So I'm not my ego... I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my feelings, I'm not my physical sensations, right? What am I? I'm just not that. What I am can't be described. I can't be described. I don't fit into any categories. And Hashem, all the more so, doesn't fit into any categories. Okay? So if you have questions, you can ask me privately. But that's it for today. You can, wow, look at that. Good guard.